But I know how much I'm willing to lose, you know, at that moment. And I said, if we have to sell the house to pay off all the debt, I'm fine and cool with it.
I recently joined Sidebar and I have to share my experience with you. Sidebar is a leadership program that accelerates your career. The program is designed for the world's most dynamic leaders and professionals who want to do more, do it better, and do it faster. Sound like you? It's like having your own personal board of directors made up of brilliant industry leaders. Sidebar found me a great match with a highly vetted and supportive peer group. We meet bi-weekly to discuss my challenges as an entrepreneur and builder. Every call has been impactful, helping me navigate my next steps and blockers. Peer groups provide accountability, diverse perspectives, and raw feedback, which is the most important. And everything is confidential. The best part is Sidebar runs the program and you just show up. They have the tech, the people, and the processes to drive impact and growth. Professional facilitators lead you and your peer group through a research-based curriculum that unlocks specific insights from each group. Learning from other people's experiences has been so valuable. By joining Sidebar, you are better prepared to face complex challenges, advance in your career, and make a bigger impact. Jump the growing waitlist of thousands of senior leaders waiting to join Sidebar and build your board of directors by visiting sidebar.com/she's interesting. That's sidebar.com/she's interesting. Welcome to She's Interesting, a conversation about business, money, and well-being. I'm your host, Rochelle Hariri. Today, we have a very exciting guest with us. I hope you all have your notebooks ready and you are ready to take some of this knowledge from Eva Lau. Eva is a respected entrepreneur turned investor. She's one of the few women leading a venture fund in Canada. As a founding and general partner of Two Small Fish Ventures, she leverages her experience to help early stage transformative tech companies achieve internet scale. Before launching Two Small Fish Ventures, Eva was a founding team member of Wattpad, one of Canada's most successful tech companies. Really incredible. As the head of community and content for the storytelling platform, she helped the company scale from hundreds to millions of users. That's something that we can all dream about. Before Wattpad, she was the director of product development of Bright Spark Labs, a Toronto-based accelerator where she mentored numerous local startups. So she's been in the field for a while. Eva continues to offer her time and expertise to help other tech companies succeed and is involved with many incubators and accelerators. She also serves on the board of many startups and Volta, Upside Foundation, and Branksome Hall. Eva has a bachelor's degree in industrial engineering. We have an engineer here today.
Woohoo!
Yeah. From the University of Toronto and an MBA from the Schulich School of Business. Holy crap. Eva, welcome to She's Interesting.
Well, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
I am so excited to interview you. I was telling Valentina, our studio lead earlier, that I'm a little bit nervous because I think you have just had so much success. You have so much knowledge. And I really, what I like about you and what I've researched about you, because we've just met here today, is you are so thoughtful with all the decisions that you make in your life. And we were talking earlier, you're a very pragmatic thinker. And so I'm ready to take some of your knowledge. And I hope everyone has their pens and paper ready to go. So let's get started.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. You know, while you say that I have a lot of successes, so thank you so much. But I think, you know, behind every stories of the so-called success actually carried a lot of wall scars. Mm-hmm. So I'm here to actually share those.
Yes.
And hopefully, you know, everyone, including the audience here, will take some nuggets out of it.
Absolutely. I think that's the thing about She's Interesting is we want to talk about the reality behind these stories. And we're here at this table, we're having our drink and we're talking to each other because we want to know more about you. We want to see a different side of you than what everyone gets to see, which is the businesswoman, the investor. So it's been 2 years since Wattpad was acquired for $600 million USD. That's incredible. Now that the dust has settled, how do you feel closing that chapter and ending that journey?
I think, you know, for me personally, that chapter actually ended, you know, quite a while ago because I left the company in 2013, mm-hmm. Took a year off and trying to kind of like figure out what's next, you know, for me. I left when the company had raised a big Series B at the time already, mm-hmm. and they were at the growth stage. Alan finally have all the funding that he needed to continue to grow and scale the company. And at the same time, I wanted to spend some time with my daughters. And that's when I made the decision of like, you know what, scale up, it's not necessarily as fun as startups. Mm-hmm. So why don't I take a step back and then turn myself into an angel investor? So I have been angel investing for a couple of years and then later on turned myself into a VC and then eventually launched, you know, right now fund three, mm-hmm. you know, of my venture fund. So the chapter closed more formally actually for Alan when he, you know, mm-hmm. sold a business in 2021. But at the same time, certainly, you know, it affected us as a family. And
for sure.
Now that, you know, that chapter has closed, it allows me to think more in terms of, okay, what would the next generation of tech giants going to look like? Mm-hmm. Not that I wasn't thinking about it. You know, I was, you know, investing for a while already and funding many of the successful companies right now in the ecosystem. And but I guess at the same time, you know, the mega trends happening in the tech ecosystem is so interesting right now, you know, with AI and Web3 and, mm-hmm. you know, the more demanding, you know, in terms of compute power. So it actually set me up to kind of like, you know what, now is the chapter, now is the time to look forward. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, it's incredible to hear about your journey and how you were saying that in 2013 was the decision that you made to walk away, but then you got into angel investing and then you went into VC and now you have your third fund. As you were going through these changes, at what point did you decide to make these pivots? Because I think a lot of times in our careers and as we're making decisions, and I call it playing chess with your life.
Absolutely.
There's like, I feel like there's a calling sometime, even for myself, when I quit my job, I felt compelled to do something. Mm-hmm. I was tired of the mundane. I was tired of what I was doing. And so for you, as you made these pivots, were there any signals that you were watching out for? Was there anything that came to you and you thought, I need to make a change?
That's an amazing question because, you know, in order to answer you this questions of like how I planned the journey in a way, to give you some context, you know, I was born and raised in Hong Kong. So very Asian culture. I came to Canada only when I was a teenager and finished my high school and then eventually went to U of T engineering. So back then in the old days, my parents had an expectation of me, oh, after you graduated school, mm-hmm. then you should be in a big corporation and retire from there. You know, and then climb the corporate ladder if you want and, you know, become VP of some sort and then just kind of like wait for retirement.
the very immigrant parent mentality
exactly.
that I think all of us have felt from our parents as well.
Exactly, right? So for me, certainly the climate has changed, you know, when we graduated. You know, we were talking about back then when the older generation retired in a career for like 20, 30 years. It was very common. In our generation, absolutely not. I remember when I graduated engineering, I went into, you know, a job interview and half of my class was there because, you know, wow. there wasn't, enough jobs at the time. So I have learned very early on to basically see where life leads you. Sometimes you may want something badly, mm-hmm. but it's still not coming your way. And there are things that you don't necessarily really want. They're right in front of you. And it
that's right.
seems to be the most pragmatic thing to do. And that's what happened to me. So I landed in the software engineering world, right after graduation because I had to take that job because that was the first job that's available for me. Like, yeah. What's better than zero? A job is better
exactly.
than zero, right?
Yeah, money is better than no money.
Yeah, right? So then I took that job and then later on I moved from the software world to the hardware world because my mentor sold the company and I felt that, okay, you know, I need to move on to the next thing. And ho and below, I got an opportunity in a hardware company. I'm like, oh, I've done software. Let me try hardware. And I loved technology, but very quickly I realized that corporate world is not my thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, long story short, I kind of like go through one step at a time. Knowing each step, I want to learn something new. Mm-hmm. Knowing each step, I want to have fun. When do I know it's no, you know, that I need to move on? It's when I don't have fun anymore.
Yes.
It's important that I feel that a lot of people, they kind of feel stuck in their career because they're not having fun. Mm-hmm. Of course, you have to be pragmatic. Like if you have no fun, but you have no job, then of course, you know, you have to continue to work there to make sure you bring food, you know, on the table. That's mm-hmm. that's given. But at the same time, if you have enough of that risk appetite, knowing how much you're going to lose if you take that risk at most, you have those things well thought out. Mm-hmm. It actually allowed us to jump onto opportunities to expand yourself, learn new things, and see the fun side of that opportunity. And at the end, you will become a better person. Mm-hmm. Through that journey allows you to take the next step forward.
That's absolutely like amazing. It's so aligned with how I've been thinking about my life recently as well, too. I love that you said leaning into the learning, because I think oftentimes when we can tell something's wrong, we can tell we need a change and we don't, it's a fear of something that's holding us back. Mm-hmm. And I find that for me anyways, I can put my fear and anxiety aside if I focus on the fact that I am learning, that I'm developing as a human, I'm developing in my career. And if you lean into that, there's like, you can't fail. Even if things don't go the way that you planned, at least you learned and you have a different approach, a holistic approach to how you're making decisions in your life and where you're working. And I also like that you mentioned looking at the next step, because that's honestly something that I preach to myself and to my friends, where don't look at the whole staircase, because that can be so daunting and so scary, because you don't know in 2 years where you'll be, right? Mm-hmm. But if you focus on what's going to come next, it's so much easier on you. And it's so much kinder for yourself to say, I'm going to focus on this thing for now. Let's learn here. Let's work here. Let's develop here. And as you take action, things will come your way and you'll learn. And your path isn't linear. So you may end up going in a different direction that you wouldn't have even thought of 2 years ago as you were thinking about what that staircase would look like.
Right. So I feel that, you know, there's something that I want to kind of like, you know, latch on to while, you know, we're looking for the next step. Sometimes that next step could be a short stint, but sometimes get next step could be a long stint. You know, like imagine when you try to start a company, you know, when you start fundraising, when you start building something, it's not like, oh, it doesn't work out. Like, I'm going to try it 3 years. If it's not, let me just, you know, hop onto another train. Mm-hmm. Because that, you know, have some reputation issue. Right? Like you start something, it's, you know, not going well.
You can't
well.
Finish anything. That's what
you just cannot ever finish, you know, anything. So, so that's not necessarily what I meant by that. It's like when you actually saw an opportunity and you feel that's the right time to do it wholeheartedly.
Yes. Jump in.
And I always believe that if you give 120% of yourself in that opportunity, that journey could be quite clunky, hard, not necessarily how you imagine it would go. But in the end, you have sweat that sweat, shed those tears, and, you know, gave those blood. You would have no regrets. And I think that's what I meant by step by step. It's you go into the next in, the next opportunity, put everything you have or, you know, put your heart at it, give your energy, do the best you can. Then when you're done with it, there'll be no regrets.
Yeah.
You had a ton of fun. You made great friends, met great mentors, and that will set you up for the next step. That's what I meant.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That it's actually a great transition too to my next question, which was, I noticed I was reading online when I was researching before the interview that early days in Wattpad, and this comes a lot back to what we were talking about of how do you know when to start and stop something? How do you know when to take a leap or when to turn and navigate? And so my question for you is in the early days, you and your husband had just had your second daughter, and Wattpad at the time wasn't generating a lot of revenue, and he had to start a second company to fund Wattpad. Was there a time when you thought to yourself, this is too much, I don't want to do this anymore? And how did you talk yourself out of that? Because obviously you guys continued with Wattpad. And what advice do you have for any entrepreneurs and businesswomen right now who may be going through difficult times and they don't know when to pull the trigger, when to keep going?
Yeah, so that's an amazing question. So yeah, back then, you know, when Alan was starting the company, it was really ahead of his time. you know, when mobile computing was not as mature as it is right now. Kindle was not even there.
The iPhone wasn't even around.
iPhone wasn't even there. Yeah. So, you know, when we were building Wattpad back then, the app was running on those feature phones, so the Motorola Razr, that kind of like a flip phone. And certainly, it was very hard for people at the time to imagine that you can read and write on a mobile device like that. So as you mentioned, not a lot of revenue, $2 per month from Google. And that was the ads supported revenue that we have. And we have to share it with Ivan's family. So yeah, we got $1 a month. It was actually pretty okay, given that the hosting fees was only $5.
Oh my goodness.
But you can imagine, you know, how hard it was. And when do we know, you know, if we were to stop or, you know, how would we know if, you know, back then? So I want to kind of reverse back a little bit. So me and Alan have been in the tech community for a long time. As mentioned, I was, you know, the head of, you know, product development back then in Brightspark Labs. And that was a tech incubator during the dot-com days. So I've seen a lot of boom and bust in the ecosystem. So when Alan wanted to start the company with Ivan, he came to me and said, hey, I'm going to, you know, quit my job and do that. And right in, you know, right away, very naturally for us is to like, how much are we willing to lose? And that has always been then our mentality in doing many things in our lives. Because life is not about a straight line of like, you do this, you get this, you do, you get that. Sometimes you do this and you won't get anything back. And that's
right.
That's what taking risks looks like. You want to do something, you expect a good outcome, but it's not getting that, then that's the risk that you have to do. So me and Alan have been very good at doing calculated risk. So when he wanted to start Wattpad, he promised me that he will give it a try for 2 years. So during those 14 months in between, there were absolutely a time that we were like, why the hell are we doing this? We were so close of selling our house in order to continue our life, not just Wattpad. It's just our life. We may have to sell a house to to continue our lives. And it was extremely difficult. And so me and Alan were like, well, looks like we have to sell the house. But it was before the two-year expiry. So I kind of had to stick to my promise. And I said, well, I said, I will give you 2 years. The expiry is not up yet. So it's okay. We can keep trying. We are highly educated, very well skilled. If we need to go find a job, worst case, I'm sure we'll be able to find a job. But I know how much I'm willing to lose, you know, at that moment. And I said, if we have to sell the house to pay off all the debt, I'm fine and cool with it. I'm okay to be zero, but I'm not okay to be negative. So I said, if we have to sell the house and hunker down in your mom's place or my mom's place, you know, yeah, it's not ideal, but we'll survive and I'll be okay. We'll start from zero again. And luckily at that time, he and Ivan then, you know, started some consulting business and trying to build another platform in a mobile compute side because that's their expertise. And very luckily, that company eventually get acquired by, you know, by one of the companies. And it kind of lift us out from the debt cycle a little bit. So which is great, you know, and that kind of gave us breathing room, allowing us to continue on with the, you know, within that expiry zone. And guess what? Within that expiry, you know, before it actually happened, iPhone came out. We became the only one.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we became the only mobile app that allows people to read, initially read on the mobile device. Yeah. And later on, we captured the market with Android. Back then, BlackBerries, you know, back then, Windows Phone. We practically became the only mobile platform in storytelling for all mobile devices.
That is so amazing because it's... When you think about life, and as we were saying, it's not linear and there's different challenges and obstacles. And sometimes I feel like from a spiritual perspective, I'm a spiritual person, I feel like obstacles are put in front of you even in a way to test you, like, how much do you want this? And I feel like as this obstacle with your home was happening, first of all, you're an incredible partner for being so patient. Honestly, as an incredible wife, being so patient and saying, I said 2 years, let's stick to the 2 year. Because I'm pretty sure a lot of people listening right now will probably say, hell no. If that happened, I would be like, we got to go get jobs. This dream is over. So kudos to you for being so thoughtful of sticking to what you said. Also having so much belief and conviction that things would change. And believing in yourselves, I think, is the biggest part.
Yes,
knowing that
no.
you can fix it.
Oh,
yes, really?
And no.
Okay,
yes,
tell
and
me
no.
more.
You know, I think you know, in a way, you may given me too much credit, you know, to be the good wife here. But
okay, let's dig deeper.
But I hear what you're saying. I think at the time, you know, certainly, you know, was I comfortable? No. How no? Mm-hmm. You know, we were playing with this my kids' college funds. Mm. You know, when we are zero, I actually meant zero. But at the same time, there are two things was happening in my heart at the time and kept me kind of like, I got to do this. Mm. So first of all, I'm also a very spiritual person. And at the time, you know, after hours of thinking and many prayers, I just felt at peace to move forward.
I love that.
Feeling that we will be okay. You know, it's not like, yeah, I think we'll be all right. You know, of course, you know, as I said, from a rational perspective, a logical perspective, we were educated, experienced, we'll be okay.
Yeah.
So we have that sense of peace from, yes, keep going, you'll be okay. You'll be taken care of. But that's one part of it. But the other part of it, I think, you know, for those audience, especially women in the audience right now, and this is something that I'm it's actually quite private and I want to share. I grew up in a family when my dad was the sole breadwinner and a very modest nuclear family. And my dad gave it all. But because he was the sole breadwinner, he dared not to take risks. You remember back then I was saying like the culture was you work in a company until, you know, you retired. Mm-hmm. And then that was it.
It's all about security, yeah.
So I always felt that, I'm sure that he didn't feel this way, but I felt that way, that if it weren't for me and my sister being his load on his shoulder, maybe he would take some risk and do something else and have a better life. So if my husband wanted this dream so badly, you only live once. He's my life partner. Mm-hmm. Do I want to have regrets with him when we are 70 years old, sitting by the harbor front, feeding pigeon? No, I will never feed pigeons. No. But you know what I mean? Like, and yeah. Kind of like, should we have hold on to that for 6 more months? If we had not, like, I just, that image makes me feel sad and sickening. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make sure, again, as I said, give it all. 120%. No regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets. I've done it. I've tried it.
Yeah.
I've given it all.
That's where I think perspective is so important. And I think oftentimes in this generation and when we're working, I always say like people become a little bit neurotic when it comes to their work and their careers. And that's what fuels the wrong decisions sometimes because it's coming from the wrong place. Whereas I think in your situation, like you said, you're a spiritual person. You've thought of all the different possibilities from like a spiritual perspective, from a future for your children and yourselves and what your meaning in life is. And because of that, then you were able to say, okay, I've literally looked at everything. I've thought of everything. This is going to be fucking hard, but let's try. Let's do a little bit longer.
You couldn't, you know, put it better than yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, you know, when you do a major decision in your life, it's important you do a 360, right? I think some people may simplify things of like, if then else, you know, if I do this, then this, if I do this, then that. But now I think AI actually you know, told us it's not like that, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. If this
meant that. You know, it's more like pattern recognition. It's more like about, you know, looking at the environment, understanding what's happening around you, and most importantly, what's happening within yourself. How do you feel about a situation? What's your risk appetite? What's your downside protection? What's your plan B? Like all these kind of things mm-hmm. comes into play so that you know what the calculated risk looks like. And then you can then go in 120% because you know what the worst case looked like.
Yeah, you can proceed with confidence and caution.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's go back to your time at Wattpad. As I mentioned earlier, you had scaled the user base to millions and millions. And that is something that is so impressive. That's something that every marketer, every community person, every tech startup would die to do. And I know that you have the asset framework that you use. So maybe we can dig into that a little bit as the key, one of the key strategies that I'm sure you employed during this time and how you were able to use the asset framework to grow and scale your user audience. And then also from the asset framework, what's the hardest part?
Of course. I think, you know, let me give you a slight correction. Mm-hmm. We were actually not sure what we were doing. We were shooting in the dark. Okay. I wish there was I wish there was an asset model to guide me through. The asset model is actually, you know, a summary of our wall scars. Mm-hmm. And not only by building Wattpad, but by investing in companies that have that very strong network effects. And so, you know, very quickly, ASSET is an acronym, A-S-S-E-T, A stands for Atomic Unit. Any network from YouTube to Wattpad to Facebook to even some B2B SaaS product, it's always a network of something. It could be a network of video for YouTube, a network mm-hmm. of stories for Wattpad, and then a network of data, you know, for some B2B AI product particularly. Or, you know, in some collaborative platform, it could be a network of users collaborating. So that's what A means. And the first S is seeding the supply. Like for any network, how do you seed the supply of these atomic units? Meaning, how do Wattpad start by having a network of stories when there is no story? You know, how do you start a YouTube when there's no video? And how do you start from a B2B SaaS perspective, like to have the first set of data for you to run the product? That's called seeding the supply. Next is to scale the demand. Like who mm-hmm. wants to have this network of story? Who wants to have this network of videos? And who wants to have this network of data? Mm-hmm. And then later on, once you kind of like figure out the two S's, then you go into the engagement level. It's like, how do we make this product extremely engaging and continuously to grow this network of something in an organic way? Without spending a dollar in marketing, how do you kind of like get that mm-hmm. organic growth through engagement? And then the T stands for tracking your proprietary data to allow you to do something else. And in context of Wattpad, the proprietary data of all the mm-hmm. stories being shared, all the engagement around it, allowed us to run AI on it to predict the success of those stories and then eventually turn those up and rising content into TV shows, movies, and books. And that's why we have, you know, over 100 productions happening right now mm-hmm. Around the world. So that's in essence of what the asset model is. If you were to ask me what's the most difficult one, I would say it always go back to seeding the supply. Mm-hmm. Defining the atomic unit is really up to the founders. Do I want to build a network of resume? Meaning that I want people to share their resume. Then you end up building a LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to say, I want to build a network of job posting, then guess what? You're going to be building a network of job postings, right? So that's up to the founder to define what do they want to build. But then once you define it, then it's like, okay, who the heck is going to give me the first set of these atomic units? Sometimes the founder may just create themselves. I curate it or I create it or my team put it out there to begin with. Yes, it may work. But if there's actually no levers for the founders to pull in such a way that the actual supply of those atomic units, it's organic. Mm. Otherwise, you always be spending money to acquire these things. Then guess what? It's a very transactional-based network. Mm-hmm. And if those suppliers are not getting the value, then they will churn. Mm-hmm.
So I would say the most difficult part in general of building Wattpad to scale to the hundreds of millions of users we are talking about here is what are the reasons that the users are really loving and engaging on your platform? What value is your platform really unlocking for them that mm-hmm. they cannot get anywhere else? So in the context of Wattpad, everybody have a story to tell. But there was nowhere to tell the story. Some people want to tell the story and publish it as a book and only have that satisfaction by having it in a bookstore. Whether it's collecting dust or being a bestseller, they don't care. They just want to make sure that they have a physical book.
Yeah. It's a very old school way of thinking about
that. Yeah, a traditional way of thinking about how a story is being told. But some people, they just want to have their imagination jot down and start telling this very interesting, cutesy love story that, you know, that the writer is imagining in mm-hmm. in their heads, and just see how the audience react to it. Do they need it to be in a published book? No, they just found that this is an interesting idea. Why don't I tell the world? So, and some people say, you know what? I just learned about my grandfather's, you know, hard life when they were an immigrant, and I just want to kind of write it down. Maybe initially share with the family, but guess what? If there are a larger audience can draw lessons from it, I would love to tell that story too. So there are many reasons why people want to share the story. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's to capture that will, capture that need, and providing them an opportunity to unlock that value. That's how you get the supply going. Once you get the supply going, then you're going to ask, okay, so these people are willing to give you something. What do they actually need in return? And will the demand side give that return to these suppliers? So at the end of the day, the platform is neutral. Like, you're just kind of creating that platform for these two-sided marketplace in a way to get it to work. Then, well, some people over here in terms of the supply side, they may actually want a monetization out from it. They want to actually have people pay for it, da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. But some people just want their story to be read. If that's the case, how do you make sure that their stories are read? And that's what scaling the demand looks like. So during the time when we were building Wattpad, we practically leveraged two mega trends to scale the demand. And the most important one was mobile. Mm-hmm. People were bored, on the go. They have this new shiny object. What do they do with it? Well, read a story. So we allow the access of these stories through every single mobile device.
I have so many friends who've had challenges getting pregnant. Did you know 1 in 6 people experience infertility? If you're trying to conceive or even just thinking about it, it's important to prep your body. And if you have a partner, theirs too. I know the space can be confusing and sex ed seems to have missed a few chapters, but that's where Bird & Bee comes in. The female-founded Canadian company offers prenatal supplements and at-home tests delivered right to your door. The supplements are developed by fertility doctors and include all key nutrients you need in one easy package, including antioxidants that support egg and sperm quality. Bird & Bee knows that fertility is a marathon, not a sprint, and is with you every step of the way, from preconception to postpartum. Head to birdandbee.com to get 15% off your first order with code INTERESTING. As someone who's always on my phone and taking notes and writing things and writing my thoughts and planning even for this podcast or working with clients, I love that because you can be on vacation and an idea comes to you for a story. Mm-hmm. You can just sit there and quickly write it out and start building that story as you're traveling, and you don't have to be bound by being at your laptop or being in your office. And of course, some people may like that. That's their style. But mm-hmm. I think for a lot of us, being out is where you get inspired. And so it's amazing that with their mobile phone and with the technology that you've created that's so disruptive.
Yeah.
Stories can be written and told anywhere. This never existed before.
Yes.
And I think that's what's so exciting about Wattpad and this moat that you created around Wattpad. But what I want to ask you now is, when I look at technology today, I work with a lot of different technology companies. Mm-hmm. Lots of really interesting startups are being created. Where do you see the most disruption? And everyone's talking about AI, but where do you see true disruption where it's almost like, you know, the blue ocean, red ocean strategy? Everyone's fighting right now in AI. Everyone was fighting in Web3, and I think they still are. But what else is out there that you're super excited about as an investor where you say, this has a very unique moat, this is going to be freaking huge?
So I think, you know, the three mega trends right now that I'm really betting on, I think, you know, it's a lot of people already thinking about it, but not necessarily in a very meticulous way mm-hmm. of how we approach it.
I agree.
So from a technology perspective, we when I say we, I mean the team at Two Small Fish, namely me and Alan, and also the other partner, Brandon. Brandon was the founding data scientist at Wattpad. So he joined Wattpad back in 2012. Mm-hmm. So what I was trying to say is AI has been around since then. Mm-hmm. So we are extremely familiar with the trends and all the development and progression right now with the AI stream. So in terms of large language model in the context of generative AI, like we are aware of it long ago and have always been looking at this space and particularly when it comes to the research realm, what are the researchers doing right now to continue to push the boundary mm-hmm. of artificial, you know, general intelligence. So for us, I truly believe that artificial intelligence is actually pushing what human has always been operating in, what we call local maxima. It's like the collective intelligence, that's the best we can do. AI assists us to drive that local maxima to perhaps the global maxima. Meaning that AI can help us to do far better mm-hmm. if we were to just do it alone. So in the old days, you know, first of all, everybody would have noticed right now, English is my second language. For me to write an essay, to write a speech, all in English has always been a daunting task. I'm like, how do I start? Where do I start? But right now, I work with ChatGPT. Not that for them to generate the whole...
As a support.
As a support, yeah. Not mm-hmm. not generate the whole article, but it's like as a support. I would say, okay, this is point A and point B. This is what I want to talk about in paragraph one. This is what I want to talk about in paragraph two. How do I transition it? I just ask, you know, ChatGPT. And they'll say, oh, you can do this. You can talk about this part and bridges with this. I'm like, that's a great idea. So you see how it actually assists me mm-hmm. to push my boundary, push my creativity to do better. So I actually feel that, you know, as we continue to grow the technology in AI, it's going to bring enormous value in our day-to-day. So what is the moat? You're right. You know, everybody can kind of like prop something up and mm-hmm. just, you know, use ChatGPT or I should say the large language model that's already out there to be and build a product. I've seen founders tapping into some open source libraries. Within a few weeks, they build a prototype. Mm-hmm. But I think to build moat in the AI space right now, it's really about domain expertise and domain knowledge. Mm-hmm. A lot of these foundational models right now are very general. You know, they scout the internet. They get those generic knowledge and they are making groundbreakings and in light speed in a way. You can see new models coming up and do far better things. But to have those technology to apply to a domain, it's not that straightforward.
Yeah.
So you need to actually have those proprietary data and build the sophistication in a specific use case and build those technology and knowledge around it. So what is the moat? The moat, eventually, you can say, yeah, you have a group of scientists building this drug discovery using large language model. They have this one using this one. Mm-hmm. It seems to be kind of competing the same thing. Well, what it comes down to is why your customers cannot easily leave your platform. Why can they churn from your platform? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, what it comes back to is strong network effects. Whether it's because, guess what? You know, this platform, you know, building a large language model for drug discovery, because every single scientist are going on it and the other ones, no one goes on it. Well, mm-hmm. guess what? Then this is the moat because of usage. But at the same time, if the other company is building it with extremely proprietary data and that set of data nowhere else you can find mm-hmm. because they organically grow the data with some, you know, very special, you know, features in the product. And guess what? And that's what the moat is, because you have created a proprietary data set and network effect on a data level that people can only get it from your place.
Exactly.
So that's how I see, in terms of the AI space, how it where the winners will mm-hmm. eventually emerge from. So that's one space that we actually betting on quite heavily. Mm-hmm. So the other one is also, it's Web3. We don't do cryptocurrencies, mm-hmm. but we believe that the characteristics of Web3 of being immutable and all sorts of, you know, fun thing around it, there are use cases. So we are also looking at this space to look for the appropriate use case with strong utility. And one of our latest investment in Story Protocol and is exactly like that. Mm-hmm. The last trend that we're really betting on, it's also depending on the first two trends. So you can see that initially in last November when OpenAI make ChatGPT available, everybody's mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, you know, their hosting fees is like, you know, hundreds and thousands and then millions of dollars per day because more people use it, they need more compute power. Same thing for Web3. I think back in the days when, you know, cryptocurrency was kind of like still extremely sexy, then everybody yeah. went mining and all those kind of stuff, then, you know, verifying the blocks. It takes a lot of compute power. So data centers are having heat issues. You know, the chips has to go faster and faster and faster. But eventually, you're going to hit the plateau of the Moore's Law. Mm-hmm. So what's next? Right? So we are looking at technology companies right now to solve that problem, to solve that compute problem. It could mean, you know, technology that allows semiconductor design engineers to, you know, verify their design quicker, faster, mm-hmm. so that they don't have to waste lots of money in terms of sending the chips out to build a test chip and come verify that they can just do everything, you know, simulate it before it actually went, you know, tape out and become a test chip. Or it could be new technologies to allow a semiconductor company to arrange their own IP stack in a very interesting way to optimize for power, to optimize for heat, to optimize for calculation speed. So those are the things that we think have, it must happen mm-hmm. in order for the first two.
They're dependent.
To continue to propel forward.
Yeah.
So that's how we are looking at the big picture right now in the ecosystem, rather than looking at, well, of course we look at the basic of a company of like, do they have customers? Do they have product market fit?
For sure. That's
the
basics.
That's the table stick. You must mm-hmm. have those things to be fundable. But if you're asking me in general, like what makes us exciting, what, yeah. you know, feel excited about, those are the three things mm-hmm. that I think it's going to be extremely transformational mm-hmm. for the next decade.
Right now, when it comes to AI, we're just scratching the surface.
Absolutely.
And everything that I see is popping up. Is to your point, some founders are thinking very deeply about it and thinking about the long road and the benefits. And some I think are just, they just want to get in the game.
Yes.
And so you see a lot of likeness out there. One thing that I was reading up on that I'm really impressed with, and I can't remember the name of the startup, maybe you would know, but it's an AI health tech company. And so they are basically, their AI system will review the same work that a radiologist would review. Mm. And they're doing testing to see when a radiologist is reviewing the results for a patient versus when the AI does it, what's the level of accuracy between the two?
Yeah.
And I think things like that are fascinating to me because I have a deep care about health and humanity and what we could do with technology to push things forward into the next step. And when I see that people are using AI technology, not just for regular communication and, you know, like on the marketing side, helping me with like headlines and things like that. But a more impactful way where on a human-to-human level, it's helping them with healthcare.
Of course.
And the future of what this could mean for even developing countries where they need access to resources and there's a lack of, but AI could be there to support them.
Yeah. So, you know, funny enough, you mentioned that. I'm not sure if we are, you know, talking about the same company, but we actually invested in a company called Oncoustic back in 2018, mm-hmm. doing exactly that. So they are a group of researchers and scientists, and what they're trying to build, they actually built it already. Back then they were trying to, but now they have built it. They basically take ultrasound waves. So like, you know, when you do an ultrasound, I think for those women, you know, on the audience, you know, if you had ever pregnant, you know what ultrasound is all about. But ultrasound was actually used in a lot of other disease and illness, particularly in the early days of liver cancer. Mm-hmm. So instead of comparing images of ultrasound of mm-hmm. a liver, they use the sound waves collected raw through those ultrasound devices and to kind of figure out, could that black dot over there, it's cancerous or not.
Wow.
So that's what they have built. And they are deploying those technology right now just at an ordinary ultrasound device. So that brings so much more value closer to the patient very early on. You know, in right now, if you feel not well, your doctor will get you a blood test. And then if the blood test is not right, then you come back and do more tests. And then
See a specialist. And then wait 6 months.
And perhaps even, you know, do a biopsy. And so there are the many steps involved. But imagine now that they're already, you know, in market, that some of the practitioners will say, you know what, let's just do an ultrasound first to see what's the likelihood. And then we'll take the next step sooner or later. That cuts through in the old days, how many steps necessary before they reach to a prognosis. It's like, okay.
Absolutely.
Maybe we should do this now because it's extremely likely to be cancerous.
Much more accuracy. And I think just from a patient care perspective, there's so much right now. I mean, we're in Canada. So if you're in the US, it's a different situation. But waiting months and months to see a specialist, even trying to get an MRI will take you sometimes 6 to 8 months. And when we talk about healthcare and the future of the citizens of different countries and what we need to take care of the elderly, take care of ourselves, I think AI and health tech is something that I'm the most excited about personally, because I think the value is there, the impact can be immeasurable, and we need it. As we look around at our healthcare systems that are breaking down and long wait times and increase in disease, we need something to support. And I feel like this is where technology, if Canada can be faster a little bit,
technology,
we can keep up.
Technology touches everything. I'm a big, big, big believer that innovations will improve the quality of lives for everyone in the long term. Yes, there will be some pain points or issues that we have to deal with. But in the end, innovations always improve the quality of life. I'm sure that, you know, back in the days, in the 1400s, the king and queens probably live a shittier life.
Absolutely, they
than we do now.
I mean, yeah, of course, even the let's see, even if we just forget the technology, just food alone was probably terrible back then.
Yeah, like the way that you go bathroom and all those kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, showering for sure.
Yeah.
I think you've already given so much in this interview, and I'm so happy that we have you here. I want to do a quick transition to the topic of money, because part of this podcast, I want to have more women talking about money. We have successful women on this podcast who can give incredible advice about money, mindset, and investing. And because it's generally a taboo subject, people don't even share how much, you know, their salaries are, but we talk about all sorts of other things. So when we talk about your mindset on money, has it changed over the years? Or have you had specific principles that you've always sort of lived by when it comes to money?
Well, absolutely. Value or perspective of it has changed as a person matures and also as the circumstances change. But in the end, one thing that I have always been a big believer that we are custodians of our wealth. So custodian actually means that you have the privilege, but you also have the responsibility, right? So that's how I always guide myself, you know, in the way of how do I look at money? We are custodian of it. If we are smart about it, money can help us do a lot of things and also help the people around us in many ways. But if we're not good custodian, we could be trapped by just, you know, the hallucination of wealth and actually do irresponsible thing that can be irreparable. Right?
Spot on.
So I would say during the early days when I was young, when I didn't have a lot, you know, I came from a very modest family, then taking risks is certainly not on my books. When you have barely enough to get by, like what kind of risk would you like to take? Practically none.
Exactly.
Right?
You
just want to get by.
Yeah.
So for me, I would say during the early days of my life, survival was what was guiding me. Making sure that I can survive. Making sure that I have enough. that I don't have to worry about the next day. Mm-hmm. So yeah, during the early days, when I joined the software startup back then after I graduated, not getting fired, making sure that I have, you know, the paycheck every other week was my number one goal, right? So doing everything I could to make sure that, you know, I have a stable job to be able to, bring money home for my mom and for my sister because my dad passed away young. Mm-hmm. So it was important for me to make sure that I have that stable income. But once I had the taste of, yes, I actually could do more, people value me, and I have more to give to an organization, then obviously I became a lot bolder, mm-hmm. being able to kind of feel that, you know what, I'm okay if I switch jobs because I am highly employable. Then that risk taking, all of a sudden know how much I'm going to willing to lose. So imagine if I have to take 1 month off in transition between jobs, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, it's not that scary for you to kind of think about, you know what, I'm going to secretly look for a job now. Mm-hmm. And if there's a gap of 1 month, I'll be okay. Then you will have that appetite to move on to something else. So that's what I meant. You mature and circumstances change. Now you have 10 years of experience. You have accumulated some savings, maybe not a whole lot. And maybe at the time, you know, I was actually married with Alan already. And I'm like, you know what? He has great income. We made some money through stock options, you know, through our career. I think I'm okay to take a few years off and do my MBA. So that's when that mm-hmm. circumstances change. Your risk appetites change because you're willing to say, I'm going to bet my life on another degree, believing that degree will give you unprecedented upside that you would otherwise not being able to have. Mm-hmm. That was my belief back then.
Yeah, and you're making the money work for you in a sense,
there
rather than you working for the money.
There you go.
And I think that's what happens as we get older in our careers and why this podcast is for women over 30, because
yes.
our mindset about money is different now, where instead of rushing, trying to make money and trying to make ends meet, it, you know, you get to a stage where like you can say, I have enough that now I can start to use the money to work for me, and I'm not going to let the money circle around me. I'm at the core and I decide how I'm going to play with it.
You are bang on. We should never work for money. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, as I keep saying, survival mode, you have to kind
Absolutely.
Of like, you know, those are...
There's a privilege with being at that stage.
Exactly. Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is you're bang on. We have to make sure the money works for us. We are the custodian. Money are at our disposal. It depending on what we want out from it. Mm-hmm. Some people drive, get gratification because spending money makes them feel good. Mm-hmm. For me, I am not necessarily like that. I love shopping. I love particularly window shopping, browsing. You cannot believe how many websites that I actually have things in the basket but never checked out. Just that idea.
Just
of
feels
like,
good to just put it in the cart.
Put it in the basket.
Add it to the cart, yeah.
That's right. Add it to the cart. I may one day get it, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, that's fun. But at the end, I feel that I'm in control. I'm in control of how I want to spend it and how I want to invest them. And the risk profile that I know very well that what works for me. So I think, you know, if you ask me right now how I see money, it's money has to work for me mm-hmm. to make me a better person, do things for my family that I could otherwise cannot have done. And yeah, of course, draw pleasure from it in some ways, mm-hmm. not indulgence, but I've worked through my life.
And you deserve it.
I deserve to enjoy some of
and
the
there's
fruits.
No, there should be no guilt with that
exactly.
either.
That's just the fruits of our hard work. Then I totally deserve to enjoy it. So I think it's a mindset. It's like you're a custodian. These are your tools. Mm-hmm. And how do you make use of these tools to have a better life? And also how do you make these tools to make you happy and be a responsible person around it?
I love that you ended with being a responsible person, because I think money is something that if you don't have the right mindset can really control you and can be used in ways that are actually not beneficial for you or for anyone or for community. And so I love that you ended with that, because I also know that you guys with Wattpad had made a really big donation as well when you did the sale. And so I think it's just, it's true to your nature. It's true to the way that you live your life and your perspective, not just about money and work, but how you want to live your life, where mm-hmm. you are, as you're growing and you're building, you're giving back to the community. You're giving back to others who could use it and benefit from it. And I think there's, when it comes to money, the mindset should not be to save and hoard. Because I also come from an immigrant family with a single mom. And that was always the idea, was save your money, you might need it. But that's because it was a different generation and different traumas that they had around money. And so now I think the perspective for me anyways is similar to yours, where you want to use it to benefit your life and benefit others and to help you grow and let the money work for you versus you trying to save it and hoard it and work for the money all the time, because that really doesn't get you far. And it also, I feel, gives you like a dim perspective on life, where if you're thinking about every cent and penny and trying to save versus using it in an abundant way, it makes your life feel very black and white.
Yeah, I'm so glad you talk about, just about hoarding or and the mindset around it. And I think you're right. I think the older generation, or even during our early upbringing when mm-hmm. scarcity was a thing,
absolutely.
Then you want to make sure that you have enough. I found that sometimes if we don't realize the enough that we have, then we will always kick into this mindset. It's like, this is not enough. Like I need
being
more.
Grateful.
I need more.
Yeah.
But when you say more, when is that enough? So I think, for me, when I look at an opportunity or even a purchase or anything like that, I would just say, how is this new thing going to work in terms of bringing us the value? Sometimes, if the value is so disposable in a way, I bought this new purse.
Yeah.
But then if that joy is not giving you a 10 years return of like, I'm going to be so happy with this purse for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Is it worth it?
Is it really worth it?
Yeah.
Right? So that's just me. That's just me. Some people, they really do feel that purse will give them a 10 years of happiness. Or maybe, one day of happiness is good enough and they can always just use it one day and return it. Well, that's, some people would do that. Not that I recommend that. But
there's rental services too.
Yeah, there's rental services too. So, yeah. So what I'm trying to say is like, it's what is that value, bring to you? And I really like to highlight of the giving back part, because everyone's growth and everyone's journey was built on the back of somebody else's success. Mm. Or somebody else's hard work. We may not have known. Like simple things of how can you get to school when we were young? Because someone was willing to be a bus driver. Right? How did you, get from being a kindergartner to then become a university graduate? Because there are teachers who may be making ends meet to give you that teaching so that you can learn from them. So in that context, if we have the capacity to give back, to share, it's actually a multiplier. You allow other people to build on the success or your resources and become better people. Then all in a sudden, it's no longer just you having enjoyed the success, but you allow people to enjoy it. So this is the mindset I want to hone into. It's like, rather than having the government to giving support or a charity organization to just give support, but if everyone can give a little, then all of a sudden, it may look like drizzles from a faucet, but if everybody turned that on, we would have buckets and then barrels and then perhaps
oceans of resources for everyone to draw upon.
I love that you say that because it, from a spiritual perspective as well, it's like helping other people, helping your community, being there and not just saying, well, that's the job of someone else or the government. We have, you know, social services, they'll take care of it. But just being a responsible citizen.
Of course.
And doing what you can with what you have, whether it's a lot or a little bit of service, a little act of service is good and it goes a very long way.
Yes.
So first of all, I want to thank you for your act of service being here today.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. I really enjoyed this conversation. I feel elevated. I feel really good. I feel grounded after talking to you. And I hope that everyone who's listening and watching today feels the same way. That I still had 2 pages of questions. I'm sorry, guys. I mean, we might have to take some of this offline, but thank you so much for your wisdom and for stopping by She's Interesting today. For everyone who's watching us, please make sure to subscribe to She's Interesting on all the streaming platforms. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We are on YouTube as well. Follow us on Instagram and subscribe to the newsletter. So thank you so much. Thank you, Eva. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I hope you all enjoyed the conversations because I certainly did.